The Cetera Report, CIT 89.5 and FM. We're joined now by Stephen Gowans. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes, I'm here, Phil.
Hey, thank you very much for being available. I had short notice, but you have written a piece. It's available today. On the subject of what we know now of what the Canadian military knew when they began to engage dropping bombs on Libya. Can you tell us what grabbed you about this and why you decided to put out the article today?
Yeah, well, I should mention that really it's not what I wrote. I've introduced an article that was written by David Pugliese, who's an Ottawa citizen reporter who does a lot of excellent work, and he obtained some Canadian intelligence documents which showed something that he's already demonstrated previously with other documents, which was that the Canadian military knew that the opposition to Gaddafi in Libya was not, as NATO said at the time, dominated by responsible men and women, but in fact was dominated by militant theocratic Islamists. But he also obtained documents to show that the Canadian military, or Canadian military intelligence, had been warning the government before the NATO strikes against Libya, or before the military intervention in Libya, that if this intervention went ahead, it was very likely that they would produce long-term chaos in the country, which indeed has happened, with Libya reduced to a complete shambles. And now, interestingly, since then, our own prime minister has denied that NATO's intervention created the chaos that has paralyzed Libya, despite the fact that we now know that the Canadian military was warning the government that there was a good chance that this indeed would happen. What's also interesting, and what Pugliese reminds us, is that the Canadian military intelligence had noted that the eastern part of Libya, from which the uprising against Gaddafi had erupted, was an epicenter of Islamist extremism, as they called it. And Pugliese had also pointed out, and he's pointed this out many times before, however it's still significant, that Canadian pilots at the time who participated in the NATO intervention joked privately that they were part of Al-Qaeda's air force. They themselves recognized their bombing runs helped to pave the way for rebels that were aligned with Al-Qaeda.
Well, this is Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. And that raises a couple of issues. Stephen, where is the opposition now that these stories are coming out? Are they saying, oh, you misled us? And how about the media itself? You know, some of these military people were making these comments about being Al-Qaeda's air force back at the time, right? Where is the diligent reportage?
Yeah, there's very little. I mean, the only thing I know about this is that done by Pugliese. He also pointed out that the Department of National Defense had noted at the time that Gaddafi was a staunch ally of the West in the war against Al-Qaeda and Islamic extremism. And he obtained, Pugliese, that is, obtained a number of DND reports from 2002, 2003, and 2006, in which Gaddafi's efforts against Al-Qaeda and his cooperation with the U.S. in providing information on the terrorist networks were highlighted. So it was recognized, first, that indeed there was this, militant theocratic Islamist current in Libya. That was really what was dominating opposition to the Gaddafi government. And curiously, today, we have the foreign affairs talking about what we need to do with respect to Libya, saying Canada believes that the best response to terrorism and violence is for all Libyans to unite against extremists and reject terrorism. Well, that was exactly the project in which...
Do they wear pom-poms and funny uniforms when they say these things? That's totally rhetorical comment. It absolutely no value, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, and as I was pointing out, this is exactly the project in which Gaddafi was engaged. And yet, that's the, despite being engaged in that project, he was the NATO intervention.
My memory is that the U.S. urged him, and Canadians, I assume, participated, urged Gaddafi to release the people who had been fighting in Afghanistan and had returned home to practice terror against him. He'd imprisoned them, but he was encouraged to release the very people who are now destroying Libya.
Yes, and who led the rebellion against them.
To prove to the Americans he was equally liberal as they were. Now, the people who'd carry this out, by the way, many of whom cannot now visit Libya because their names are on the list of people but the bad guys want to get. I recall when this happened, they turned their eyes very openly and publicly to Syria, and they said, ah, Mr. Assad, you should learn a lesson here. And now we see what is going on. Do you see this as one phenomenon? And who is behind the present really horrific, violent actions going on in the ISIS-controlled territory of Syria?
Well, you're asking, is this what's happening in Syria simply an extension or of what happened in Libya? Yeah, I would say it's exactly the same thing. I mean, if you look at the Arab leaders who are under assault, they're secular nationalists. The theocratic, leaders of the Gulf monarchies, the kings and the despots there, who are aligned with the United States, they're practicing all kinds of atrocities and oppressions against their own people with impunity. They're not being called brutal dictators. It's the secular nationalists that are being called brutal dictators. In the West, the United States and Britain and others are continuing to do what they've done for many decades, which is to use the theocratic Islam as a counterweight or a cat's paw against secular nationalists. Previously, they used them against socialist movements and communist movements and secular nationalist movements, and now they're using them against the secular nationalist government in Syria, and did the same against the secular nationalist government in Libya.
And apropos of that, I always think of nomenclature. The Western media today, for example, Toronto Star, I read an article that the Iraqi leader, they said, is threatening the Sunnis. But it's really the Toronto Star and others who talk about, and the New York Times, probably the worst offender, Washington Post, they talk Sunni-Shia when, for example, President Assad of Syria does not use those terms.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. And because it's a non-sectarian state, I mean, and the government has tried to overcome these sectarian divisions. Assad said something really interesting about Iraq, and he was referring to Paul Bremer, who was the, the U.S.
former governor of the great state of Iraq.
Yes, who said that, who established the constitution by which Iraq is now governed, and said that it wasn't a constitution, it was simply a way of fomenting sectarianism. That's what their constitution is.
Sorry to interrupt, but I mean, that I recall, we've remarked on this before. Assad is just very clear so many times. That I thought that really was a profound point. He tells you, look at these constitutions, what do they promise the people? And that one promised a sectarian formulation which could lead to nothing but bloodshed. Syria, he says, we don't have that constitution. Which is one of the reasons, I suppose, after 4 years of their trying to get him, they haven't succeeded so far.
No. No, I mean, under the Ba'athist government of both the current Assad and his father, I mean, their approach is one that is anti-sectarian. They recognize that there are these underlying sectarian divisions that, you know, Western powers have often tried to exploit and deepen those sectarian divisions as a way of fomenting disorder or divide and rule, but their approach has been to overcome them, or try to overcome them. I don't think they've always been successful at doing that, But that certainly has been their approach.
Mm-hmm. We just spoke with Ramsey Clark, and he said he's fairly confident of the, and impressed, frankly. He just had a visit. He just got returned from Damascus. He said the situation in Damascus relatively, well, he says, frankly, it seems normal, though there is fighting in the country. And there is this question of, will there be will they be able to sort of bring about a negotiated agreement here? I know that we've just achieved one of a sort in Ukraine. I'd like you to, if you don't mind, I would make that a segue. Because of the pushback from Putin, there seems to be some little room here for to begin negotiating settlements. Do you think the one in, for example, Ukraine looks promising, and would that bode well for what's going on with Syria?
Does the one in Ukraine seem promising?
The present, where they're withdrawing the artillery, et cetera?
In the short term, I would say. I'm not sure how promising it would be in the longer term. It's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Doesn't seem to be much real success in trying to arrive at a settlement at the moment in Syria. I know there have been efforts, and I think the latest effort has fallen through,
mm-hmm.
from my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I would expect that to happen. I mean, the United States and Britain and the West are certainly, I still believe, are committed to seeing the overthrow of Assad. They're still committed to training so-called moderate rebels to carry
yes.
that task. And there's also talk about, is it time now to shift our focus from ISIS onto the Assad government? So I believe that the United States continues to have as its objective the ousting of Assad.
I'd have to agree with you. There are so many elements there. There's also the issue in the greater one, and I guess you I get you on the last point here that they actually are fish. They're bigger fish to fry. Yet I mean, it's been the formulation has been they were after Syria. They would like to get Iran. They would like to encircle Russia and China. Is that roughly something you would agree with?
Yes, absolutely. That seems to be the plan.
Yeah.
Certainly moving in that direction.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree with you very much. This is Stephen. We've been talking to Stephen Gowans. Gowans.wordpress.com. It's an excellent article. So that was the Ottawa Citizen this past weekend?
Today, actually.
Oh, today.
Yep.
Well, you're on top of it. Well, thank you very much, Stephen.
Okay, thank you.
Okie doke.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor@CAUT.FM. Let's all get over and see John Carlos to Sussex at 6:30. He is going to talk about the Olympics 1968 and is raising his fist against racism. You've been listening to Taylor Report. And thanks, Phil Conlon. Thanks, Andy. We'll see you next week.